gentlemen, your attention, please.
Hello.
Hey, look who's here.
Pete, how you doing, man?
Ignition sequence start. 3, 2, 1. Liftoff. We have a liftoff.
McMurray on 720 WGN.
312-981-7200 is our phone number. You can also text me at that number at 312-981-7200. You can follow me on Twitter and Instagram and Facebook at Pete McMurray. How you doing tonight? It really is the calm before the storm. It's 11:09. We're on until 1 o'clock when Nick takes over. The calm before the storm. We'll get to the weather in a second, but Vic, I got to ask you about that story. The woman walked into a convenience store and bought beer as she was picking up her kids. Is that right?
That is correct. I've seen the video. That's what it appears to show. She's driving a bus. She goes in. It appears to show her buying beer. And then there's, because of that, like in the story, it said that a clerk,
yes,
was paying attention and called authorities, and then they were able to get the surveillance video from the bus, and
it clearly looks
like a Bud Ice that she pulls right out of a bag. That's what it looks like.
Really? Out of all the beers you could be drinking?
Yeah, one of the larger ones, too.
People are dumb. They are dumb. What are you thinking? There's cameras everywhere, first of all, and secondly, why would you put kids in harm's way? So crazy.
Yeah.
The weather is the big story, man. I know so many people that are headed to the airport, and I told them, you got to get out on Tuesday. Tomorrow is just going to be crazy.
Any way we can move Thanksgiving to summer? Because it happens every
single year. The airlines are waiving fees before the expected storms tomorrow.
Yeah.
So that's it. So they know that this is coming. It's too bad. 530 flights within or into or out of the United States were canceled today, and more than 200 have been delayed. The disruptions follow about 150 flights canceled Monday and another 2,700 delayed. This is going to be a mess. Think about all the flights that have been delayed or canceled, and they're just carrying over day after day. So if you're flying tomorrow, you got a two-hour wait. Easily 2 hours. Wow.
And you know what else is happening tomorrow, Pete, is these winds. And I know they have a couple of options at O'Hare Airport. They can go to different runways that allow the pilots to take off in different directions. But when you're talking, according to Tom Skilling, 60 mile an hour plus by late morning, early afternoon, that could cause some cancellations as well here in Chicago.
People aren't going to get out. They're not going to get out tomorrow. Over 100 million Americans are currently under alert for these two storms. The airports most impacted, you mentioned Denver, Phoenix, Los Angeles so far as a result of the storm systems gaining strength. Top airlines like American, Delta, Southwest, and United have expanded their travel advisories for the coming days and are waiving change fees for impacted travelers, which means it's going to be a pain in the booty.
Right. And I mentioned Denver because O'Hare Airport, obviously a major hub for United Airlines.
Right.
Denver is another one. And so they've got a ton of flights going to and coming from Denver. So when Denver's impacted by snowstorms, guess what? It impacts Chicago as well.
It's going to be terrible. And coming back on Sunday, we have another storm happening this weekend, right?
Yeah, there's round two coming this weekend. Yeah, that one we'll actually probably see some rain or snow from.
Here it is. Saturday and Sunday, the storm systems will continue. I don't mean to laugh when I read this. The storm systems will continue to move eastward and may cause delays in the central and eastern U.S. Wow. More than 55 million travelers are expected to travel 50 miles or more from their homes for the holiday.
I would suggest downloading Trains, Planes, and Automobiles to your Netflix on your iPad before you go to your flight.
What do you do? I mean, you just have to get to the airport early, I guess. Are you going to be able to change your flight? Can you do that nowadays? Most people buy the cheapest ticket possible, so you can't change. Well, I guess if you can waive the fees, if you buy the ticket, I've done this before.
Mm-hmm.
So if you go to, let's say, Expedia and buy the cheapest ticket possible, you can't change to a different flight, even paying the fees. You're stuck. But if you have one of those tickets that you can change, you may be able to change your flight to an earlier flight.
Right, like if you bought it from the airline, right? So first of all, check with your airline before you head into the airport for sure.
Yep.
And they're going to usually try to do the best they can. I know it's weather, and they call it an act of God, which releases them from some ownership. But they do try everything they can to rebook you. And I think they can even, in some cases, they've even canceled your trip and allowed you to rebook it. But it has to be used for the same departure and destination city within 1 year.
Have you ever been delayed at an airport?
Oh, sure.
I mean, for a long period of time.
Let's have a shorter conversation. Have you ever not been delayed? No.
What's the longest you've ever been delayed for a flight?
Oh, overnight. Spent the night at an airport once when I was younger and didn't have money for a hotel.
Two things come to mind. Last November, I went to New York, and they had the worst day snowstorm. I don't know how they phrased it, but the city was in deadlock, and it could not move because it was a rain-snow mix, and they weren't ready for it. And it took you maybe an hour and a half to go three blocks. And believe me, I had to be at an event. It was the Radio Hall of Fame. Brandmeier was being inducted, and Johnny was late, too. So we're all running down the street. You couldn't take transportation, so I got delayed coming back to Chicago on that. But I was headed to Ireland, where our plane was delayed, and then they kept pushing it back. And then you're in the bar, and you forget about time. Next thing you know, it's 6 hours, and then they cancel the flight. They're like, just go home and come back tomorrow.
Yep.
It's the worst. People are going to be delayed. They're going to be angry, and they're going to be the lead on the 6 o'clock news. That's it.
Still faster than a horse-drawn wagon, though.
It is. Yes, it is. But we get so angry when we get to the airport. And if you're not TSA cleared, you got to stand in line, the security line, and you get upset about that because they're going to be long lines tomorrow. So be prepared. You got to be in a zen state of mind if you're heading to the airport tomorrow. All right, quick break. It's 720 WGN. We're doing Roe's show tomorrow. And Curtis, we have Dan Ponce booked.
I am excited. It'll be fun. We actually have Dan coming on also Thursday morning.
Really?
Yeah, for Dave Plyer filling in for Steve Cochran.
I know Dan is this very proper news guy and a proper television host. He's lazy, just like all of us. I mean, he's on tomorrow, it's 6:40 tomorrow night. He's like, you got to remind me. I'll just forget. I'm like, Dan, just set the alarm on your phone. No, I can't do that. Can't do it. I'll never remember.
Call me at 6.
Call me at 6 o'clock. It's not like it's 6 in the morning. But remember, his day's backwards.
Yeah.
So he starts his day at 4, so he is up at 2, and he's at work at 3, which is rough stuff. Here's a question for you. 312-981-7200 is our phone number. What time do you eat Thanksgiving dinner? 312-981-7200. What time do you eat Thanksgiving dinner? I ask this because you may have problems with digestion. Marie-Pierre Saint-Ange, an associate professor of nutritional medicine at Columbia University, says that Thanksgiving is a day when people tend to overindulge, and there is always ways to balance that. Preferably, eat the bulk of your calories early in the day. So what time do you eat? Curtis, what time do you eat? Your family eat?
My family eats about 2 or 3 o'clock.
2 or 3 o'clock. Okay. Let's go to Mike. Mike, what time does your family eat?
Typically, they eat around 2 or 3 as well.
2 or 3 o'clock. I thought that was the number one time. Thank you, Mike. Our family eats around 2 or 3 o'clock. It is not. That is the second most time. Let's see. The number one time most people eat on Thanksgiving Day is? What do you think?
Oh, gosh. 11?
I would think 11. That was my guess. You would think early and they have the rest of the day. Between 4 and 5 p.m. is the number one time people eat Thanksgiving dinner.
That seems like a more traditional route. I would have said 11 o'clock because I think people would have liked to have a plate full of food and maybe watch football or whatever at the same time, digest it, and then you have the whole rest of the evening to do whatever you want, go outside, play football. Or I don't know if some businesses are open Thanksgiving, which I know some of them have.
Black Friday, a lot of businesses open on Thursday night. Well, let me give you the times. Hold on. Between 4 and 5 p.m. is the number one time. Number two time is between 2 and 3, which I feel like most people eat around 2 in the afternoon.
Yeah, that's fair.
The number three time people have Thanksgiving dinner is between 3 and 4 o'clock. The number four time is between 5 and 6 p.m., and the number five time is between 1 and 2. So before noon, nobody's eating before noon. Interesting.
Which I think that's also fair, too, because a lot of people will wake up, they'll get dressed and ready. They probably don't hit the road until, what, 10 or 11 o'clock, maybe?
Remember, it takes a long time to cook a turkey. So if you're cooking a turkey and you're going to eat at 11, you got to put that puppy in like at 5 in the morning, right? Don't you have to cook that bird for 5 hours?
Yeah. Hopefully you defrost it, right?
You're supposed to leave it in water overnight. I mean, I've never made a turkey, but I've watched my mother. Listen, it's two guys talking right now. They have absolutely no clue how to make a turkey. They're such idiots. But my mother, I know, she'd throw it in the sink and leave it out overnight, which doesn't sound right, but it does thaw out.
Aren't you supposed to have, if you have like a 12-pound turkey or something, it's supposed to be like 6 days or something like that?
Well, you put it in your refrigerator.
Yeah.
We have a chef on tomorrow. We'll ask the chef, but I know people are doing something wrong. It's just that way.
What if you're supposed to thaw it and then deep fry it?
Deep frying's easy. Deep frying's very quick.
I've never had a deep-fried turkey.
Deep-fried turkey is unbelievably tasty. Oh, it's so good. Think about fried chicken.
Oh, yeah.
Well, this is fried turkey. It's the same thing. No, it's different. No, it's fried chicken turkey. That's what it is. No, it's different, Pete. It is not. It's not different. You put it on a smoker, too. Off the charts. Fantastic. All right. Time to talk about a Chicago tradition happening in the next week.
Christmas.
Chicago holiday traditions, we all have them. One that my wife goes to every single year is happening soon at the Merchandise Mart, Thursday, December 5th through Sunday, December 8th. It's called the One of a Kind Show. We talk about this every single year, and I still don't know how to explain it to people. So joining us is the marketing director for the One of a Kind Show. It's Aida Sarvin. My wife goes to this every single year, and I just don't know how to talk about it, but it's just unique.
That is absolutely correct. It's a unique shopping experience like no other in Chicago during this time of the year.
People go crazy over this sale, don't they? The one-of-a-kind sale.
They really do. It's a fun activity to do right before the holidays. It is great to do with your friends and family. It's indoor. It's an all-inclusive shopping experience.
Right,
it's where you come, spend the whole day, eat, drink, have fun with your friends, and really purchase some amazing art from independent makers that are there to talk to you about each one of their pieces that they've created.
Well, explain to people what exactly the one-of-a-kind show is.
So this is our 19th annual show. It's held at the Merchandise Mart, and it's always held at the beginning of December. It hosts about 650 artisans and makers that bring their work to set up shop during these 4 days at the Merchandise Mart. It is all handmade work, and it ranges in different categories. It spans from fine art, ceramics, and fashion to furniture, pet products, holiday, and home goods. So there's something for everyone on your holiday shopping list. There's something for you, for your home, for gifts, and it's really, really handcrafted quality work.
My wife goes every single year, and I want to say last year, because you have these, you know, since they're handmade, you have these necklaces that you can't find anywhere else, nor are they duplicated. So it's one of a kind.
Yes, and I'm sure she gets so many compliments on it, and she just says you have to come to the show to buy one.
Yeah, they have
something similar, the exact one.
Exactly. I mean, you have things from artsy furniture to jewelry to, I think she bought a scarf last year. I mean, anything and everything.
Yes, sounds like you're in trouble, but yes, there's something for everyone, and I hope she finds something for you this year.
How do you go out and find these vendors for the one-of-a-kind show?
So we traveled through the country to really find unique work from artists that have great craftsmanship. They have a great presentation. It's quality work. And we also have artists that just reach out to us because they have heard about the show and what a great opportunity this is for them to present and sell their work. So we have artists from Canada, Israel, some really interesting, unique international artists as well.
I want to say, do you have the lotions and potions too? Is there someone there that does that, that sells that?
We have artists that have bath and body products.
Yes, that was my speak right there. The lotions and potions, which means yes.
Yes, but they are not mass produced. They're special scents. They're really quality items that are great for your skin. So it's we do have those here as well.
Wow, it's the one of a kind show. It happens Thursday, December 5th through Sunday, December 8th. And again, you have over 600 vendors. You mentioned that at the beginning, right?
That is correct.
I mean, that's just crazy. And if people haven't been to the Merchandise Mart, because I worked there years ago before the renovation, and a lot of people don't get a chance to come downtown, especially to stop by the Merchandise Mart. It is beautiful now.
It is a beautiful building. It's been through some major upgrades in the last few years. And the show's hosted on the seventh floor of the Merchandise Mart. And it's, 4 days of lots of shopping to do. And tickets are sold online and then on the first floor of the show. And so, they're $12 and they're good for all 4 days of the show.
Now, is the bar and the restaurant open that's on the main level?
There is a restaurant, Marshall's Landing, on the second floor, and it is open during our show.
That's fantastic. I mean, you go there, you can spend the entire day at the Merchandise Mart. Aida, thank you so much for coming on. It's the One of a Kind Show. What's the website people can go to and check it out?
OneofAKindShowChicago.com.
That's very easy. It's the 19th annual One of a Kind Show happening Thursday, December 5th through Sunday, December 8th. Aida Sarvin, thanks for coming on, Aida, and happy holidays.
Thank you. See you next week.
What we're going to do right now, we'll take caller number 9 and 10, 312-981-7200. If you'd like to go to the One of a Kind Show, we have two friend four-packs to give away. A Friends Day Out package, which includes four tickets to the One of a Kind Show, four tote bags, and four food vouchers, which can be redeemed for coffee or food at the show. 312-981-7200 is our phone number. We'll take caller number 9 and 10. It's Pete McMurray on 720 WGN.
I love those J-I-N-G-L-E bells.
All right, let's give these away. One of a kind sale. We got a family four-pack or a friend four-pack to give away. Charmaine from Wakanda, how are you?
I am great, Pete. Thank you so very much. I'm so excited.
Have you been to the One of a Kind sale?
I have not. I cannot wait to go.
I mean, it is just crazy, Charmaine. I mean, this is a tradition for a lot of people because they have such unique items, and that's why they call it the One of a Kind sale, because they won't be the same items next year.
Very cool. I just am so looking forward to doing this.
Well, you have four tickets, you have four totes, and you have four food vouchers, which can be used for food and drink. You're going to have a great time, okay?
Thank you so very much, Pete. I appreciate it.
Awesome.
Have a great Thanksgiving.
You too. Thank you, Charmaine. Hold on the line. We'll grab your info, and let's go to Daryl in Palos Heights. Daryl, what's shaking? How are you?
Hey, I'm out Ubering. I'm thinking of taking Bob Lanigan and Ryan Hopkins to the show. I am.
Daryl, Bob Lanigan is my old roommate. He's a 6'6 Irishman that weighs 275 pounds and loves beer. Lives on the south side from Oakland.
I happen to know. I've golfed with him several times.
Richards High School's finest. Well, Daryl, you're going to go to the one-of-a-kind sale.
Good. When is it?
It is next week. It's next weekend. Can you go? If not, we got every line is full.
I can go. I'm going. I'm going to go buy some stuff that I can't buy next year, I guess. I don't know.
Daryl, four tickets, four totes, four food vouchers. And I know I'll see you sometime during the Christmas season. Thank you, brother.
All right. Thanks a lot, Pete.
All right. That is so funny. I love that. All right, let's bring up our next guest. Speaking of love, I have man love for this guy. Yeah. I love our next guest because he's one of the fiercest defensive players in the history of the NFL. I was a huge fan of his for years, and then I met him through a mutual friend at the Goombe Bash, which is a cancer fundraiser for Lurie's Hospital. Let's welcome in number 46, former safety of the Chicago Bears. It is Doug Plank. How are you, sir?
Hey, Pete. It's great. Always a pleasure to be on your show.
You know what? I love having you on, Doug, for three reasons. Number one, you played for the Bears. You're passionate about this franchise. You're still a fan. Number two, you were a head coach in the Arena League where you won a championship, so you understand being a player and understanding coaching. And Matt Nagy, who is the Bears head coach, was your quarterback in the Arena League.
Yeah, it's amazing, isn't it? It's a small world. But, you know, you start talking about football, it's unbelievable to me. You know, I still do broadcasting, but the connections, you know, there's hardly a weekend that goes by that I don't meet somebody that knows somebody else that I know.
Right.
So it's a small world, just like your world in broadcasting and on media. It's great, though. I mean, everybody's a big family, and there's not too many surprises. I mean, there are a few, as you know, as the years go on, but you know, pretty much you can depend and rely on knowing people, and you get an idea of what they can do, you know, whether it be coaching, playing, on a pretty regular basis. So you know, it's not very often that I'm surprised, but you know, I have to say I was surprised about the Bears' performance this year.
You and everybody else. By the way, I have to say, you're one of the most beloved Bears. Do you understand how much this city loves you? Number 46, because the 4-6 defense, you were such a competitor and such a great defensive player. Buddy Ryan named the defense after you because you couldn't play anymore.
Pete, you know what's great about it? Even when you're playing, I really try to give everything I could, every game, every play, every series. And, you know, even in losses, and because I'm a fan now, I watch games.
Yeah.
You know, I analyze them, break them down. But there's something about watching a team that's motivated and exciting.
Yes.
And they run onto the field. They run off the field. They run back to the huddle every time. It's like a joy to watch them play, in spite of losing. Now, you know, I remember seeing a stat recently about NFL teams that had kept teams under 300 points for the season. Generally, they won. Except I was on three of those teams that lost. We held teams to like 260 points,
right,
which was well below 300 points. But we still ended up with losing records because we just kind of ran the ball. We were conservative. Walter Payton, you know, we didn't have much of a passing game until Jim McMahon came in.
Right.
And, you know, I guess what I'm saying is, though, you know, I enjoyed every year with the Bears, even the ones that didn't go very well, because I felt like we took that aggressive physical nature and, man, we just beat the crap out of some teams.
Well, it's interesting that you say that. It's fun seeing a team that's motivated and hyped up for the game, because I thought of the Ravens last night and Lamar Jackson, who is just off the charts this year as the quarterback for the Ravens, looked so good last night. And that team, you just know that they're going to go to the playoffs. I mean, besides the fact that they have a great record, you can just tell the way they play.
And you know what? Their defense is good. I mean, they have a history of being a good team. You know, they got great fans. I've been there several times over the last couple of years. And really, they struggled. You know, everybody, you know, there's one thing about this in the NFL, Pete. When you improve incrementally. But when you get to the top of your career, your age, and then you start dropping off, like Joe Flacco was, the situation.
Yep, yep.
Oh my gosh, it isn't pretty. It's you're dropping off the mountain. I mean, you're falling off the cliff.
Yeah.
Because the skills that you had just a year ago or 2 years ago, they've suddenly vanished. And your body, you know, it's telling you a story. Please, get me off this field. I don't want to get hit anymore. You know, you're going to have to walk around with me the rest of your life. So make sure that you don't get hit again. Guys start making medical decisions, you know, insurance decisions. And what I mean by that is business decisions.
All right.
When they're on that field, hits that they would have gladly had years before, they don't want any part of now. whether it's on offense or defense, you know, and if you're handing the ball back in the pocket and you're a quarterback and you see three guys coming at you that are between 250 and 300 pounds, I'm sorry, you're going to throw the ball away, get rid of it, you know, fall on the ground, whatever.
Right.
You do not want these guys hitting you.
We're talking with Doug Plank, former Bear. Before we talk about the Bear game last Sunday and the Bears playing in Detroit on Thanksgiving Day, Lamar Jackson last night rushed for 80 yards in 6 carries in the first half. I mean, do you think he is the leading? Well, he's got to be the leading candidate for MVP this year so far.
Oh, he's an amazing individual. You know, I watched him last year when he got put in more sparingly and Joe Flacco, you know, was still on the team and that,
right,
those sort of things. But he's such an athlete. Oh, my gosh. He's so fast. And really, if I was a defensive coordinator just watching him, I would probably take two of my defensive linemen out of the game. And you would say, why would you do that? I would insert two safeties or two small, fast linebackers, because you're going to have to almost give up the running game, you know, not because of him, but because their offense is so quick and he is so talented,
yeah,
that you need fast players on the field.
Yep.
Now, it's okay to give up a run of 2 or 3 yards, but when he takes off, he gashes the defense. I'm talking about 10, 20, 30 yards, touchdowns. I mean, he just makes them look like they're Pop Warner teams, like they're, you know, like these guys don't even know how to tackle.
Right.
I mean, he just absolutely embarrasses NFL defenses.
Wow. I mean, he looked so good last night. And I think one of the DBs for the opposing team said, I didn't even know where the ball was. I couldn't tell if he was running. I couldn't tell if he was passing. When you have a defensive back say that in a post-game interview, you know that this guy is just fantastic.
Well, you know what? Here's the one good thing, though. I mean, I think they caught him a lot of times in man coverage, which means, you know, that all the defensive secondary guys and linebackers are manned up against somebody on the offense. What happens, Pete, once the play goes like 2 or 3 seconds,
mm-hmm,
you're not watching the quarterback. You're running after your guy. So you don't even see the quarterback. So when he takes off, all the other guys, there's probably 8 guys on that team chasing guys that they're man-to-man with. So they have their backs turned. A lot of times they don't even see him take off. I would sit in zone defenses. I would stare at the quarterback, all 11 guys. I would put the fastest guys I could on the field to get to him and tackle him. And don't, you know, are you going to give up 2 or 3 yards on runs? Yes, you are, but you are not going to get gashed for 30, 40, 50-yard runs.
Right.
I mean, he just tore the team up. I mean, he was a one-man show.
Mm-hmm.
And I got to say, I was very impressed.
Wow. Well, Doug, I do the show on Sundays here at WGN before the Bears postgame show with Hamp and OB. And I get here at the station right after 12 o'clock. After the game.
That would be fun.
After
I know
You know what? You and Hamp are cut from the same cloth. I mean, you're both very passionate about the Bears, but Hamp gets so angry. And I worked with him years ago, and I remember the first time that we started working together, I would take it personally, but that's just him being upset about the Bears and screaming at the TV. He will stand up in the conference room here at the radio station and scream at the top of his lungs with rage when the Bears can't make a play or they can't convert a third down. I mean, it's just crazy.
You know, it's tough, Pete, to you see Dan Hampton in a huddle with you and he goes off like that. You know what? He gets your attention and you listen to him, because he could break every bone in your body if he wanted to. And that's the reason why I love Dan so much. He,
yep,
played with high passion.
Right.
He would do anything, sacrifice himself, take down 3 blockers so somebody else could make a tackle. But I think what happened this year, Pete, I mean, I'm just looking at it for face value. If you look at the Bears in 2017, they had a 5-11 record, which meant that going into 2018, they
last
were going
year
to play all the other teams, all the other 5-11 teams,
oh,
around,
yeah,
the league.
Yep.
So they had a very easy schedule. You know, sometimes you can drink your own Kool-Aid and start thinking you're pretty good, you're pretty special.
Yep.
You know what? Things change so fast in the NFL. I mean, now all of a sudden, you're coming off as a playoff team. And now all of a sudden, you are getting the attention of every other team in your division and around the NFL. And it makes a huge difference. There's no easy games. And, you know, I think that they're just finding that out right now.
Right.
And, you know, they probably made a couple moves in the offseason, which really didn't help them from a personnel standpoint. But, you know, I just look, you know, I'm not happy with where they are right now with the record. But, you know, then you start looking at who they got to play, the Lions this week, the Cowboys, the Packers, the Chiefs, the Vikings.
Right.
I mean, where does it end? It doesn't end until the season's over.
Exactly.
I mean, this is going to be a tough run for the Chicago Bears.
Well, I'm looking at my notes. I take notes every week, and I keep the notebook in my backpack that I carry around with me.
Yes.
I had a star next to this, and I asked Hamp about it. I asked Kaz about it. Kaz was here at the station on Sunday, and I don't ask OB anything because I'm deathly afraid of him. Because I feel like he would punch me at any second because he doesn't really know me. But we start the game. We start the game on Sunday with Eddie Pinheiro kicking the opening kickoff out of bounds. So right there, we're behind the eight ball, and I'm thinking to myself, this is going to be a bad game. So if I'm thinking that as a fan, what are the players thinking?
You know what? There's something about a kicker, and, you know, I one of my best friends on the team was Bob Thomas when I played, and I love Bob. But, you know, it's hard to love kickers. Because just when you think you want to love them and they're good friends of yours, they miss a kick or hit the crossbar or hit both crossbars in the, you know, it's just
the double doink.
The double doink.
Yeah.
I can't tell you, Pete. You know, your observation was right on. Even though that seemed insignificant going out of bounds, I'm telling you, it was a tremendous message to the rest of the team.
Right.
Hey, this is not going to be a good day. You know, our kicker is already telling us that he can't even keep the ball in bounds.
He's terrible.
On the kickoff.
Yes,
it's only going to get worse from here. He's probably got a couple of missed extra points in him and field goals and everything else.
Yes.
And it's amazing how, you know, it sounds superstitious and lucky and all that kind of stuff. You're right. It does. You have to be lucky. This is one of those sports that psychologically, whatever happens on that field, oh my gosh, it has a huge impact on how you and the team feel at that moment.
Oh my gosh, it just upsets me so much. Doug, I'm going to have you hold on. I'm going to take a quick break. And when we come back, I want you to give me a grade on Matt Nagy. He's your former quarterback in the Arena League where you won a championship.
Okay.
I want you to critique him when we come back. Is that okay?
Okay,
we're talking with number 46, Doug Plank. More next on 720 WGN.
All I'm telling you is this. This team, I'd like to buy them for what they're worth and sell them for what they think they're worth. They all think they're so great. Matt Nagy, you better wake up.
Bear down, bear down, bear down, bear down.
That is some of the stuff that you hear on Sundays. You'll hear that pre and post. Hamp and OB with Kaz, pre and post on Thanksgiving Day as the Bears take on the Lions. On the phone with us is number 46, Doug Plank. How about that Hamp, man? He gets so heated in the post game.
Doug, you know what? You don't need much to get him going. I'll tell you, he's got a very, very short wick.
All right, let's talk about Matt Nagy, the Bears head coach. He was also your quarterback in the Arena League. Is he making the right play calling? Is he making the right play calling this season?
You know what? I really think that one thing the Bears were able to do last year was to get first downs and convert on third downs. They had a very high percentage. And this year, it just doesn't seem like they have any running game. You know, and, you know, sometimes I wonder why they keep running to the short side of the field. You know, there's you know, when the ball's on the hash, it's on one hash or the other.
Right.
And you have a short side and you have an open field side. And I just think you have more chance of gaining yards, big yards, and, you know, by being able to run to the wide side of the field. But my point is, they just haven't been able to convert third downs, which means they don't stay on the field, which means they don't score points. There's a lot of reasons for it. I think the offensive line could do a better job in terms of protecting him.
Pathetic.
But, you know, it just seems like their running game has really vanished this year from what it was last year.
Well, they don't have Jordan Howard, and it drives me crazy. And we've had this conversation off the air. I've had this conversation with Hamp. The short side of the field, I don't get it. If we understand that, why don't the Bears understand? If you have a short side of the field, don't run towards that side of the field. I don't get it. Drives me
nuts.
You know,
the other thing, too, it's bad, too, Pete. I mean, you start, you know, you can go online, NFL.com, look up all the statistics on the team stats.
Yep.
And you can see that the Chicago Bears, offensively, they're down at the bottom of almost every single category, whether it's total yards, points per game, yards per play, third down efficiency, fourth down efficiency. You know, when you see all those things happen and they're all down at the bottom of you know, in the lower 10% of the NFL, then you've got a problem. And, you know, it's amazing, you know, could that be traced to like one player? Yeah, it could. But I think sometimes they go away pretty much, you know, from the running game. You know, we saw that early in the season. If they weren't successful early in the game, first quarter, second quarter, they just abandon the running game and then try to throw. And believe me, when a defense knows you are one-sided and you're just trying to try to – they're gonna pressure the quarterback and make life very miserable.
Yeah, they're not going to play the run at all. Is our quarterback a bust?
I don't think so. I mean, I think Mitch has done some things good. I mean, I thought he really played well last year under the circumstances. You know, when you have one player that everybody's dependent on, like I said, you know, I don't want to say it's all him because, you know, just watching some of their games, I didn't think he got the pass protection that he needed back in the pocket. It seems to me, though, you know, some of the risk they were willing to take last year with double reverses and guys, you know, in motion and all these other sort of things and throwing the ball to the tackles. You know what? Right now, they are in a situation where I don't think they want to risk a mistake or error that's going to make them look bad. Like they're trying to go out there and just trying to outsmart the other opponent. I think they've become very conservative. You know, I think it would be their offense this year is much easier to defense than it was last year because they ran the ball. They ran short. They had a short passing game. They had a long passing game.
Right.
You know, and here's the other thing too, Pete. You know, when you're out there on that field, when you believe, truly believe in your mind you're going to win, your team, it looks like it.
Yeah.
Everybody is running around. They're all enthusiastic.
Yep.
They're congratulating each other. And when things are going bad, someone, somewhere has to come in and say, listen, no, we got to pick this thing up. We
got
to get a positive attitude, you know, start showing some enthusiasm. And I have to say, that's been missing this year.
That is so funny that you say that. I'm looking down at my notes, and I have two lines with stars again because I do Fox every 3 weeks on Sunday night and talk about, you know, the Bears and football. Everybody looks lost on the field for the Bears, and I had another one that said, who are the leaders? Who are the leaders? Where's Khalil Mack this season?
You know, let me say this, too, and I don't want to try to defend the defense so much. This was especially early in the year, and I know they've had a couple of bad games, but truly, I thought early in the year, I thought their defense was playing at a very high level. But, you know, it reminded me of games back when I was a player, Pete, and we would have like 60, 70 plays on defense, which means your offense is doing three and out,
which is happening.
They also fumble and throw interceptions. So that they were one and out, two and out. And it was so frustrating because you were going back out on that field every single day or every single possession like, man, we got to stop these guys, but we don't have any points on the board or we got 3 points or 6 points.
Right.
And, you know, I'm sorry, you can't win games that way.
No.
And I really felt like watching it where the defense really came out early in the game with a lot of enthusiasm, a lot of aggressiveness. As the game went on, they just simply got worn out.
Yeah,
so they kept going out there every single series after series.
They're
after
tired,
series,
Doug. I get it.
They're tired.
Yes.
Honestly, you get exhausted. I mean, it's. I can't tell you how many times early in my career, especially, we just had those, you know, get it off your chest things after the games.
Right.
You know, where guys are standing up going, "Hey, this is not a 50% team. We have to pull together as a team, offense and defense. We just can't do this. You know, you can't." You got to score more than 6 points to win in National Football League.
Yes.
And unfortunately, that's a lot of times we draw games where we didn't even score a touchdown.
I don't mean to laugh because I'm thinking of the Bob Avellini days, but we have about two minutes.
That's it.
Yes, it's Bob Avellini. We have about 2 minutes left, and I want to ask you about this because I was listening to the Steve Cochran show on Monday, and Hamp was on, and Hamp told a story about when he broke his nose on a Thanksgiving Day game, and he didn't really want to talk about it with Cochran, and I thought to myself, I'm going to ask Doug Plank about this on the radio. Do you remember when Hamp broke his nose on a Thanksgiving Day game?
You know what?
I remember this particular game, Pete, was the shortest game in overtime in the National Football League. And the reason why it was the shortest game, because they kicked off to us up in the Silver Dome in Michigan.
Yep.
And a guy by the name of Dave Williams, who was our running back, caught the ball and broke to his left-hand side and ran all the way down the field over 100 yards. And we scored a touchdown, and that was on Thanksgiving Day. And so everybody's celebrating down there. Well, you know what? You don't really want to be around a bunch of big guys that are, you know, lifting 300 and 400 pounds. You know why? Because they jump on each other. You ever wonder on the bottom of those piles what it's like? It's terrible.
Oh, boy.
You can't breathe. People are on top of you. I'm serious. It's like a building is falling on you, and you can't get out. And so, anyway, there's this all this partying going on down there. Guys are jumping up in the air. And guys were jumping up on the top of the huddle, which is where everybody was celebrating.
You got to give it to me. We got about 30 seconds. You got to get to it.
Okay. So anyway, I don't see this until afterwards. Dan Hampton is down there celebrating with everybody. Here comes Walter Payton. He thinks he's on the goal line. He jumps up in the air and flies 10 yards through the air, and he lands on the top of the pile, and his hands reached Dan Hampton's face mask, and he yanked it backwards. And the helmet came back, and the face mask hit Dan in the middle of the nose and broke his nose.
Oh, my gosh.
So, yeah, it was Walter Payton. I can understand why he didn't want to shed any light on that one.
Oh,
but, I'll never forget it. He was bleeding like someone punched him in the nose. I thought that's what happened.
The worst. Doug Plank. Doug, happy Thanksgiving. Always great to catch up.
Thanks, Pete. Thank you very much for having me on the show.
And we'll talk soon. All right. News is next from the Northwestern Medicine Newsroom at 720 WGN. It's a beautiful day. 720 WGN. Pete McMurray in the Skyline Studios. Polestar released the list of the top touring artists of the decade. Who do you think came in at number one, guys?
Oh, gosh.
It wouldn't be U2, would it?
Yes, that is correct. U2 came in at number one. How much did they gross in the last decade? What would you guess?
$300 million.
A lot of money. Vic, you're the guy with the music podcast.
As of today, actually. It just became available on iTunes today.
Go ahead, give it a plug. Where can we listen
to
it?
Well, thank you. I can't believe it. Album University Podcast. That's what you search. Go to iTunes and search Album University Podcast. It'll be on the other ones as well, but I just got it on iTunes, and so I'll have to do some more work to get it on like Spotify and Google Play and
whatever. Album University.
Album University, yeah.
And what is the podcast about?
It's basically, it goes back to my decision to do something about my lack of music, almost any musical culture.
I don't understand you.
Yeah, I just didn't listen to music growing up. It wasn't a priority, so I have.
Wow.
And I've always avoided it. Whenever the subject of music came up, Pete, I would always kind of sneak out of the room because I was embarrassed about it.
What? Really?
Yeah. And so, and then I finally decided, well, I came across this list online randomly, and it was the top 100 greatest albums of all time according to Rolling Stone magazine. And so I decided to start at 100 and work my way up, and about at number 69, which was, I believe, Appetite for Destruction.
Okay.
By the
Guns N' Roses, came out in 1986.
Very close. Very good. I don't know the exact date. I'd have to look at my notes,
Curtis,
but that's got to be close.
Appetite for Destruction, Guns N' Roses. I think it was 86. Go ahead. Back to you.
Great album, too. I loved it. Yeah, so I got to right around number 69, Nick DiGilio asked me how it was going. He'd been checking in with me, and he asked if I wanted to talk about it every Friday on his show, and he called the segment Vic's Picks.
Right.
And we did it for 20 weeks on his show until the, you know, culmination of the number one album.
What was number one? Can I guess?
Please.
Sgt. Pepper's.
Very good. Very good.
I knew it.
Rolling Stone said Sgt. Pepper's. Number two? I'll give you a hint.
Led Zeppelin.
No, but they had a good showing in the top 25. There was probably four albums by Led Zeppelin on that list, but
okay,
it was by the Beach Boys.
Really?
And it has a green cover.
I know exactly what you're talking about. I can't even think of the name of it, but it's
Pet Sounds.
Yes, Pet Sounds.
That was number two. But anyway, yeah, that's what And then I just decided to, one day I was like, you know what? I thought, you know what? I bet my kids would probably like to hear these segments that I'm doing on the Nick D Show. So I started to record them and send them to them in an MP3 file, and they loved it. And so I thought, really, the podcast just came about for an easier way for me to get it to them. So I decided to get the ball rolling for a podcast. And then it just, you know, the momentum kept, was building, and I decided, right, you know what, let's do this right. I'm going to hire a guy to do the VO. I'm going to hire a guy to do the music. They were both local guys. Kent Smith did the VO for the intro, outro, and Bob Kessler, great harmonica player, harp player, did the music bed. So it just, it's fun. It's really fun. You know, for anybody who either doesn't know much about music like me or,
but now you do.
Well,
you have a music podcast called Album University available now on iTunes.
Yeah.
That's so impressive.
Well, thanks, man. It was a lot of work. I bit off more than I can chew. I didn't.
It's still fun, and you're educating yourself and you're educating the public. By the way, Curtis, Appetite, what year?
87.
Are you sure about that?
Oh, close.
Yes.
Didn't the single come out in 86?
Maybe. I've been multitasking.
What month?
Back here.
What month in 87? Do you know? Because that's going to bother me.
July?
Shoot. Okay. By the way, we were talking about... And Vic...
July 21st, 1987 was when it was...
Vic has never been to a concert.
Well, no, that's not true. I've only been to probably three in my life, though.
Three?
You know what my first one was? I'm curious to see what you think about the first one. It was...
Everybody remembers their first concert. I can give that question. We'll get 10 callers right now. 312-981-7200. What was your very first concert? As soon as I say it, my mind takes me right back to the Peoria Civic Center. But go ahead, Vic.
Bobby Brown and New Edition.
Oh, no! Where was it?
It was in Las Cruces, New Mexico, New Mexico State University.
Wow.
Yeah, it was back in the day when you know... You would
sure.
What was that album that he came out with? Probably his last one.
My Prerogative?
Yep, that's the one.
Right.
And then New Edition came out and got on stage because he'd already left. But
by the way, every line is full right now. My very first concert was 1984. It was Van Halen.
Wow.
At the Peoria Civic Center. And I was with a guy named Jim Flanagan who brought a joint in the concert in a cassette case, a clear cassette case. He had it in his pocket.
So
he started smoking it, and I took the cassette case and I threw it on stage and hit David Lee Roth in the foot. And about 10 years ago, I had David Lee Roth on the radio, and I apologized to him. He goes, man, that happens to me all the time. I'm dodging and weaving. You got to get out of people's way. They're throwing stuff on stage.
That's a great story, though.
But Van Halen, Peoria Civic Center. All right, let's go. By the way, you two grossed $1 billion in the last decade. Here's your top three grossers. You got U2 at number one at $1 billion. The Rolling Stones at $929 million. Ed Sheeran at $922 million. Top grossing of the decade. Joe, where was your first concert?
Okay, let me step back here.
Okay.
Okay, what I told your producer was one thing.
Yeah?
The first one really didn't count because...
Why didn't it count? The first concert you went to.
All right. Pink Floyd.
Pink Floyd? Okay, where was it?
It was at the arena in St. Louis.
Okay, well, why didn't that count?
Because in 1982, went to the VP Fair in St. Louis and saw Quarter Flash and Elton John. I forgot about that. I was 12 years old, and we were like a mile away from the stage. So I technically, maybe that would count. But
yeah.
The first one where you go into.
Okay.
You interpret it, Pete. You're better at this.
I would say the ticket that you paid for, you got a ticket, and you actually walked into an arena or a roped-off area.
Pink Floyd, 1987.
1987, and how was that? Was that before the breakup or after?
That was after the breakup. They released, I can't remember the name of the album. But either way, no, that was long after the breakup. That was after the three got back together without Roger Waters.
Got it. Okay. Joe, thank you. Have a great Thanksgiving.
You too. Thanks, Pete.
All right. Let's go to taxi driver Bob. By the way, Vic, what was number two?
Number two concert?
Yeah.
Oh, man.
I'll tell you what number two was for me.
What you got?
It was Bruce Springsteen
oh.
at the Rosemont Horizon in 1984, born in the USA.
Okay, you and your last caller are blowing my mind because the two people that I really fell in love with, the two albums I would say, were Pink Floyd was one of them,
okay.
which I'd never listened to, and they blew my mind. Yeah, that was a few months ago. And then Born to Run by Bruce Springsteen. That has been, out of the 100 albums, that's been the one I've listened to the most.
Born to Run is his best album. Yes, but Born in the USA was my first Springsteen concert ever and my second concert of all time.
Yeah, that's a good album, too.
First concert of all time. I'm going to take a break and we'll get to these callers, okay? 312-981-7200 is our phone number. Come on, Bruce. There you go. God, that was great. The Rosemont Horizon. I loved it. First concert of all time, 312-981-7200. Bob, what was your first concert?
I heard you call my name, and I thought I got lost in the stratosphere or something.
How you doing, Bob?
I'm doing good. How about you?
Good to hear your voice, brother. Tell me about your first concert.
First one was 1978. I was a senior in high school. The Rolling Stones and Journey.
Oh, my gosh.
And Journey came out, obviously, first, and then the Stones came out with them 80s blowing up over my head and stuff. And it was a Some Girls tour. But I have to say, and I think it should be a part of this whole segment, is what was your best concert you ever went to? And that one was, after that concert, was the Blues Brothers. The actual Blues Brothers.
No way. No way. Where did you see them?
I saw them at Chicago Fest before they renovated Navy Pier.
Oh, my gosh.
Before it was renovated, they were obviously on the head stage. Muddy Waters came out first, and then the Blues Brothers. But before the Blues Brothers came out, at that time, Jane Byrne was the mayor.
Okay.
And she came in, she replaced Belanda because he didn't get rid of the snow.
Right, we all remember that, yes.
And so she comes out with her daughter and Blues Brothers sunglasses and black overcoats and introduces the Blues Brothers. And that, you know, I mean, for Chicago, and needless to say, You had quite a huge wafts
of course.
Of marijuana smoke in the air.
But what a piece of history that you saw back in, what was it, 1980, you said, at Navy Pier.
Yeah,
the Blues Brothers. Wow.
Yeah, I mean, being a Chicagoan and being at that concert, it was in Muddy Waters. I mean, a blues legend.
Of course.
You can't say he was the warm-up group. I mean, it was like 1A and 1B, you know, I mean.
That is so true. Bob, you're the best. I gotta move on, but have a happy Thanksgiving. Thank you, brother. We'll talk soon. All right, let's go to Barb and Gurney. Barb, best concert.
Hey, Pete, how you doing?
Your first concert and your best concert. We're going to do both questions. Go ahead.
Okay, first concert, Beatles, Comiskey Park, 1965.
What?
Yeah, I was very young, but I was
August
there.
Of 65, you saw the Beatles at Comiskey Park.
I did. I was 10 years old.
Oh, my
yep.
gosh.
And I remember every moment of it. Yes. Yeah, you know, it was amazing.
People think the Beatles toured throughout the 60s. I want to say they only toured for like 3-4 years at the most, right?
Probably, yeah. Like I say, I was young. I was just such a crazy Beatles fan, and my dad bought 6 tickets, so my poor mother took 5 girls. Ranging in age from 10 to 13, and she had to sit through the concert, and the two dads went and drank beer all evening and then drove us home. So,
oh, my gosh. That, of course they did. That's what they did back in the old days.
My first concert. Okay. My best concert ever was at the Rosemont Horizon, April of 1988. Michael Jackson, I had fourth row center seats, and nothing better than that. And I've been to hundreds of concerts.
Really?
And that was the best one ever.
Gosh, yes. That's one guy I've never seen in concert is Michael Jackson.
Yeah. Yeah, he got weird later on, but he was amazing in 1988. I will never forget. Once again, that was the best
the history that you have seen. You saw the Beatles at Comiskey Park, and you saw Michael Jackson. I mean, there's maybe a handful of people that are listening right now. Not even a handful of people. There's probably maybe one other person that could say that.
Well, that could be, and then I've seen Lady Gaga 4 times. I love her too, so
wow.
I just kind of cover all the generations.
If I need tickets, Barb, I'm calling you. Happy Thanksgiving.
Awesome. Okay, thank you. You too. Bye.
That's great. Curtis, first concert? I can't wait to hear this because you're younger than all of us. First concert?
Tom Petty with my buddy Connor at Summerfest.
Really?
Yes.
Never saw Petty. Still angry about it to this day. Thank you for that. Best concert?
Best concert, Foo Fighters 2015, when Dave Grohl, that was right after he broke his ankle or whatever, yes, and he was on that throne.
Yep, yep.
He still rocked out, and it was awesome.
Wow. I was on, that was Wrigley, right? I was on I was on a rooftop for that one.
Yeah.
You can't really enjoy a show. I'd like to see the band. The rooftop, it was fine hearing the music, but I wanted to see the band.
Yeah, see them themselves.
But man, he was talking. I'm not a guy that doesn't like swearing, but every other word I remember.
And he doesn't lose his voice. He screams at the top
screams,
of his lung at people.
Throwing down the F-bomb.
Doesn't lose his voice.
Yeah. All right. First concert and favorite concert. John? What's happening, man? Go ahead. John.
Hi, John from Blue Island.
Yeah, John from Blue Island. You're on, brother.
Go First concert, 1981, Van Halen, Fair Warning, UIC Pavilion.
Oh, fantastic. Okay.
And he was jumping off, and I went with the local entrepreneurial person, if you know what I mean by that.
Uh-huh.
And we had a great time in the car on the way there and back. I was a sophomore in high school.
Wow. Best concert of all time. Best concert.
Best concert. You're not going to believe this. I'm going to say I had the most fun ever at a Neil Diamond concert. I went with my wife at United Center, and we were with these. It was loaded with women.
It was
mostly
that,
women.
Was that about 15 years ago?
Yeah, probably. And I danced with my wife and these four other women, and I tell you what, it was better than going home and snuggling.
I got to tell you, I was at that show at the United Center, and I sang along to every single song. I agree with you 1,000%.
I was in about the 15th row dancing with every woman in the joint.
And Neil Diamond wears black knit pants up to his nipples, and he can still sing. It's unbelievable.
He's a lot of fun.
Thank you, John. Have a great Thanksgiving. Let's go to Diane. Diane, where are you calling from? Are you calling from Minnesota?
Yep, Bemidji.
I love that you're calling from Minnesota, Diane. Is it snowing there?
Nope.
Okay.
In the upper 20s.
It's in the upper
20s. Southern Minnesota's going to get buried the next couple days.
It's always in the upper 20s in Minnesota. All right, first concert of all time.
First concert, ZZ Top. No. First concert, Styx.
Styx.
St. Patrick's High School, 1972, I think it was.
Oh, yeah, Styx played the high school circuit. You're right. Okay. And
that was before they were known.
And
best concert, ZZ Top at the Sanford Center here about 5 or 6 years ago.
Okay. I like that. Thank you, Diane. Have a great night. Okay, Diane checking in from Minnesota. 312-981-7200 is our phone number. Let's do a few more of these. Roosevelt, calling from you're calling from Midway Airport.
Yeah, clearing, yeah. First concert, 1975, Santana Amigos Tour. He had gone at He had gone into hiatus in his spiritual music with John McLaughlin. You remember that period between 1973, I believe, to 1975.
Okay.
Then he came back. Then he came back with the Amigos tour. He came out with a complete white suit. It was a white suit.
Yeah.
It was fantastic. And best concert. I don't know if you remember, Pete. Old World Series of Rock at Old Comiskey Park.
Oh, yes. Yep. Yep. I never went, but I know all about it.
Oh, my God. About 6 hours of music. It was Santana, Molly Hatchet, Journey, Eddie Money, and Thin Lizzy. Five bands.
God, that's awesome. I love it. Roosevelt, have a great Thanksgiving. Thanks for checking in. Let's go to Beth and Racine. Beth, first concert and best concert of all time.
Hi. It's really fun because I was at that concert that Barb was at, the Beatles. What did she say, 1965?
August of 65.
My next door neighbor's mom took us up. I don't remember how many. There were probably only two or three of us. The tickets were $5.
Wow. I mean,
it was wonderful.
Well, hold on a second, Beth. I think it's funny that I said, Barb, you know, there's nobody listening, and then you call in right away,
exactly,
and you say you were at the exact same concert at Comiskey Park in 1965.
Isn't that fun? Yeah, maybe we sat by each other. But
so funny.
The best concert I was ever at was at a Blue Man Group. I've seen them twice. And have you ever been?
Beth,
it's incredible.
Hold on a second.
I mean,
no, Beth, stop. You are not saying that Blue Man was better than... I love Blue Man Group. Don't get me wrong. I've seen Blue Man Group twice. But you saw the Beatles August 20th, 1965 at Comiskey Park.
Right, right. Yeah, well, there were a lot of us there, and I'm sure there are still a lot of us that are alive. So, you know, but...
Do not say Blue Man Group was better than the Beatles. Do not say the Blue Man Group is better than the Beatles.
No, no, no. Well, no, they're different, entirely different. But honest to Pete, you know, you feel the beat in your seat on the bleachers. That's pretty incredible.
I've been the Blue Man, and how is the Beatles concert different at the end when they did the final song and Blue Man Group when they throw the toilet paper in the audience?
Well, now, I'm saying it was a long time ago. I don't remember the end of the Beatles concert, but I had a fantasy that John Lennon waved at me, so whatever.
You are so funny. Oh, my gosh. Beth, have a great night. Thank you so much, the Beatles and Blue Man Group. There is absolutely no comparison. Sam, what was your first concert?
The first concert I ever saw was Cheap Trick at the amphitheater.
Okay.
And sometimes I wonder whether I have a fake memory of it because I believe it was 1976 or 77. It's hard to remember things now. And it was right before the 4th of July, and people inside the amphitheater were throwing fireworks, like big fireworks, and during the show, one of them landed on the stage.
Oh, boy.
And the singer with the blonde hair, Robin Zander, I think his name is.
Yes, Robin Zander.
He threw the mic down, and he said, that's it. And I think he swore, and the concert ended. And I sometimes I wonder whether I dreamed that up or not, but I believe that's what I saw.
Sam, now, what year was that? What year?
It was either 76 or 77.
76 or 77. Okay.
It was late June, and it was at the amphitheater. It was a general admission concert. I'm thinking it was 77.
All right. The reason that I bring this up, Sam, is because I know Rick Nielsen very well. He's a huge friend of the show, and he's got a memory. He remembers these things, and I will guarantee you he will remember if it's true or not, but it sounds pretty true.
You got to ask him because I've been wanting to know for the longest time whether I dreamed that up or it's true. I'm sorry to say it like that. The best concert I ever saw was Linkin Park in Rome in September of 2015.
Linkin Park in Rome.
We drove down from Turin after seeing U2 and dumped our car and got to this racetrack on the outskirts of Rome, and we must have been the only American. It was late at night on a Sunday night.
Right, right.
And it was unbelievable. And then the next year, Chester goes, I believe.
Yeah, Chester passed away. I know. Sam, thank you for the call. Have a great Thanksgiving. I've seen Cheap Trick, and I'm not kidding, over 24 times, because when you live in Rockford for 6 years, Cheap Trick does a lot of fundraiser, or they'll just jump up on stage. I love Cheap Trick. But when the Beatles, when they were talking about Beatles at Sox Park, I saw Springsteen at Sox Park. But Paul McCartney, he did a show at Wrigley Field for 3.5 hours, and he never left the stage once. I don't even know if he drank water that night, but it was so good. It was so hot. But McCartney, another great concert. U2 played Soldier Field. They did Joshua Tree. Man, I love it. This is Vic. We're giving Vic ideas here. Vic is doing the albums now with his podcast. I think his next podcast is concerts. He goes on the concert circuit. We can tie that into a sponsorship deal. Get him free tickets with Jam or Live Nation.
Just don't travel during Thanksgiving.
All right, we're going to take a quick break, and coming up next, we're going to talk high school hoops with a Chicago high school basketball legend and now coaching legend at 720 WGN. I know it's the NBA music, but any excuse to play the NBA theme on NBC. High school hoop season has started. I'm pumped for it. I wanted to say hello to our old friend. He is a Chicago legend, and he's going to yell at me for saying this, but he was a great high school player at Gordon, played at DePaul University. He is now the head coach at DePaul College Prep High School. It's Tommy Kleinschmidt. Thank you for staying up. How are you?
I'm doing great, Pete. How are you? Things are great.
You got a game tomorrow, so why are you up so late?
Yeah, we played early tonight. So we played at 5 and got home around 8 and lay down for a few hours. Woke up, and I'm going to get up, study some film, and I'll go back to bed.
So is that that's 2-0 on the season, right?
It is. So we're 2-0 on the season. We got a really big one. Tomorrow night, an early test against Niles North. They're 2-0 as well. Well coached. Got a Division I point guard in Anquan Smart. So it'll be a big test for us tomorrow night at the Paul Prep.
Are you a superstitious guy? Does it bother you if you don't win your first game of the season?
Yeah, it would bother me. Yeah. We put a lot of time in the summer. And, kids practice pretty hard. And it would bother me. Sure, but long season ahead. We play 29 games, so there's a lot ahead of us, but we always want to get off on the right foot.
You know, knowing you like I do, just losing a game bothers you, let alone the first game of the season. Of course, you hate to lose.
Sure.
Now, I've seen your teams play. I saw the varsity scrimmage the other night. Is it me, Tommy, or has high school basketball gotten faster?
It does. It's gotten smaller. Meaning that coaches want to play with a lot more guards to get up and down the floor quicker. Everybody's influenced by the Golden State way of playing basketball. A lot of threes and analytics come into play. Not so much with us, but we do want to use our quickness for defensive efforts. But, yeah, the game has changed where it's faster, multiple threes, a lot of threes. Analytics again comes into play, so the game has really gotten fast.
I mean, you didn't play this fast back in 91, did you?
We did kind of play fast. You know, we had 5 Division I players on our team, so
wow.
I was fortunate enough to play with such great players and obviously coached by a great coach and Coach Pappas, but
yeah.
We did score a lot of points, but, you know, we really pressured full court and extended the court on teams. And got a lot of live ball turnover. So we did score a lot of points, but that was a little bit uncommon in the day. But now it seems to be the norm.
You know, the quality of high school basketball, Tommy, in Chicago is just phenomenal. So many great kids come out of this city.
There are, and they're training at such a young age. It's really specified in an early time with the sport you want to play. And, you know, in our era, we played 3 or 4 sports at a time. You don't see it as much. I wish we still did. I really do wish kids played multiple sports, but they're playing at such a young age and getting started with training and shooting coach and hitting coach, whatever the sport may be. It's going away from multiple sport athletes and really, really focusing in on one sport. And it's really, taking the game to a new level with how good these kids are at such a young age.
As a high school basketball coach, do you want to see a kid playing multiple sports or just basketball?
No, I would like to see him play multiple sports and, you know, really focus in on being an athlete first. I do understand it when kids are a certain size or they play and they're really at the top level of their game early, but I believe all kids should play multiple sports.
You know what? I grew up in Peoria, as you know, those great teams with Peoria Central. And, of course, Peoria Emanuel had the 4-peats. And you were great friends with Howard Nathan, who was Mr. Basketball in 1991. You went on to play together at DePaul. I didn't realize that you were a runner-up to Mr. Basketball, to Howard.
Yeah, I was. Howard beat us out, and, you know, deservedly so. He was the best basketball player I ever played with or against. He was a phenomenal person. Obviously, a fantastic player. And, you know, how usually down the, how should I say this? We really split a lot of votes up here in the city. We had a lot of talent up here. That year, there's 10 or 12 guys in the top 100 high school players in the country. And up here, we split a lot of votes with Juwan Howard and Michael Finley.
Right.
But Howard 100% deserved to be the player. I mean, when you're respected by your peers and you get off the court and one guy really shines and you got all these, you know, all Americans talking about one guy, and that was Howard. He deservedly won that award, hands down.
Growing up in Chicago, did you look up to those DePaul University teams when you were, you know, in grammar school and high school?
For sure, yeah. My dad refereed a lawyer's league at the Settlement House on Western and Halstead Avenue. So every Saturday morning, we would take Wrightwood Avenue all the way down from Harlem Avenue, and I would drive through the DePaul neighborhood. And I always remember, you know, it was 6:37 in the morning. I thought for sure I was going to see Rod Strickland and Dallas Comegys and Tyrone Corbin and all the guys I watched on GN. And, you know, I could never believe I couldn't see them because it was, you know, 6:30 in the morning. They got to be walking around, right?
Of course.
And, but, yeah, you know, I grew up watching them and loving them and watching them on GM and or GN and following them. And it was great. Those guys are my idols growing up. Coach Ray Meyer, Coach Joey Meyer as well, and I was lucky enough and fortunate enough to play for the Blue Demons.
We're talking with DePaul College Prep High School coach Tommy Kleinschmidt. Those DePaul teams were so much fun to watch, and it brought such a great light to the city. Now, your old alma mater, DePaul University, they won tonight against Central Michigan. They are 7-0, Tom.
So happy. So happy for Coach Dave, the players, the school, the city. You know, we're in a new building at Wintrust, Jeannie Ponsetto. It's been a while. Everybody knows it. It's well talked about. They are doing a phenomenal job. They're so exciting to watch. They got Chicago kids back in the lineup, and I think that's key. Although that Weems and Paul Reed, they're a heck of a players. And you got Charlie Moore. You got Marquise to stay home. So they're fun to watch. I caught the right time. I walked in the door from my game, got something to eat, turned it on. They were down 16, and they just went nuts in the second half. They scored on 8 straight possessions and got back, dug into that lead, and they ended up pulling it home. So, pulling it out. It was fun to watch. It reminded me of old school basketball. They're doing a great job, and it's an exciting brand of basketball.
So is DePaul for real?
Yeah, they're for real. Ready to go, 7-0. They played some quality teams. I watched they beat Coach McCaffrey's team in Iowa a couple weeks ago, and you know, everybody knows Franny. He's one heck of a coach, bringing multiple teams to the tournament, and they went up there, and they did a really nice job. And from the outside looking in, it looked like they really gave them a lot of confidence winning that game, and it's carrying through, and we're 7-0 and ready to play another one. I'm excited.
I'm a Northwestern fan, but I graduated from Bradley, and I watched that game last night, and Bradley was down by 20 at halftime against Northwestern. And Bradley has a good team this year. I mean, anything can happen in college basketball, and they were just flat last night.
Yeah, that happens. We were that tonight. We were flat coming out. And, you know, you travel, we always forget these are young men. They're not kids.
Yep.
They are young men. But we forget about that. You know, they sat in study hall, got up early and practiced. Wrote a paper, and they went through a scout team with 20 sets and 10 out-of-bounds plays and press offense. It happens. You know, that stuff happens, especially early on in the season. You kind of find your way as a new team. But, all the teams we're mentioning do a very, very good job coaching other great universities, and they'll figure it out.
You know,
for sure.
One of the things about being a high school athlete, you know, it's the pressures of conditioning, you're working on your game, but the pressures in school to study, these students, school is hard. I mean, I look back at high school and I say, you know, there was a few classes, but I don't remember it being this hard.
that is true. And I echo that sentiment to you. You know, it was tough. We were surrounded by great support. Either in high school with study halls and academic advisors, and then obviously at DePaul University, where we had, again, an academic supporter, Shirley Becker, in my era, which really helped me and guided me through off the court with tutoring and papers and talking to teachers and really sitting down with me. They travel with me on the road, either on the plane or on the bus. You know, you do get off, say you go to Cincinnati, you get off the plane, get off the plane, check in the hotel, and you're right to study hall. And then you're up early in the morning with a shoot around, and you're right to study hall, and then you might take a nap.
Right.
And then you play your game, and you're back on that plane, going back home to do it all over again. So, there's a lot to it. You know, I think mostly the kids in high school don't see that. I think they, some of them, I should say, you know, think it's the pros.
Yeah.
Know, they're getting off a plane, checking into the Ritz and playing, and that's really not the case. You know, there's right. a lot of work to be done. Off the court to be able to participate on the floor.
I mean, you're studying, you're having a Subway sandwich, you're getting on the bus, and you're going to play a high school game, and you have school the next day.
Yeah, it's tough. It's tough, you know, and I think kids realize that you got to be really disciplined off the court, on and off on the floor. You can't really be disciplined on the floor if you're not doing it off the court. So I think it is an adjustment period. I think these universities now do such a great job of really, you know, tutoring these kids off the floor,
sure.
really sitting with them and mentoring them, really showing you how it's going to go to be a Division I athlete or Division II athlete or Division III athlete. For that matter. And there's only 3%, only 3% of kids play college athletics. And, you know, it's, you're lucky, you're fortunate,
wow.
and you're pretty talented to be able to do so.
Wow, that I didn't realize it was that low, only 3%.
Yeah,
man.
3%, yep.
And before you go, I got to ask you about Rick Malnati, former coach at Fenwick, won the Catholic League Championship 3 times. He coached at New Trier. I just had him on the air when his brother Mark Malnati came in studio to talk about the new Lou Malnati's opening on Michigan Avenue in the Wrigley Building. You're a great friend of Rick Malnati. Rick is doing nothing. When does he come back to coaching? There's no way he can sit out.
I hope he sits on the sideline. His teams are tough to beat. He's a great mentor to many, especially myself. He was extremely close with my high school coach, Steve Pappas. And, you know, it's life comes full circle a lot of times. And I remember playing against him as a coach and following him, and then I'm coaching on the sidelines against him and become even closer. You know, again, I hope he stays on the sideline. He's one heck. Coach, he's on a short list in his state history, the best to ever do it. So he's a mentor of mine. I'd rather call him and ask him what I should do or his thoughts than seeing him down on the other end of the court.
That's one of the things about Chicago. Chicago high school coaches are a very tight knit community, aren't they?
They are. Yeah, you know, we're all pulling for each other. We all know the behind the scenes dealings of what goes on in high school basketball, what the kids go through. Sometimes they even get to school. You know, parents and kids' expectations and administration and school and, you know, the pressure that these kids had to, you know, try to make it out of a certain area or try to make it to get a Division I scholarship to relieve pressure of paying for college when some kids can't. So there's a lot that goes on behind the scenes that a lot of people don't know.
DePaul College Prep plays tomorrow night. What time? 7 o'clock, right?
We play at 7 o'clock, Niles North at DePaul Prep. It's great school night. The gym's going to be jumping. They fantastic team. It's going to be high energy in there. I'm excited, Pete.
I get off the air at 7. I'm going to show up late, probably around halftime. So, you know, don't call me out, okay?
I always appreciate the support, Pete.
Tom Kleinschmidt, now you can go to bed, Tommy. Thanks for coming on tonight.
Thanks for having me, Pete. You're an awesome friend, and I appreciate you.
All right. It's Tommy Kleinschmidt, everybody. Quick break. It's 720 WGN. Thanks again to number 34, Tommy Kleinschmidt. Curtis, you don't remember this because you're only 13, but Kleinschmidt was a Chicago legendary high school player. Took his team to state, Gordon Tech, back in, I think it was 90, graduated in 91. Yeah, he went his junior year, and I think he broke his leg his senior year. But, you know, it's a Chicago kid,
yeah.
great player in the city, and he stayed in the city and went to DePaul. It was a huge story
yeah.
back in the early 90s. And he's turned out to be a great coach, got second in state last year for DePaul Prep.
He's a great guy. Sounds really nice.
Well, the high school basketball community, especially the coaches, are very, very close.
Yeah, you guys were talking about that.
Yeah, and they make it a point to let people know that. Even though they're competitors, they stay together and they have this fraternity of coaches. But he's just the best. Great guy.
Super
love
nice
him.
Guy.
A lot of us are going to be traveling for Thanksgiving. Thankfully, I'm not. You're not going anywhere because we're working together.
Yep.
But people are hopping on the planes, and the TSA has released a list of items that you can carry on.
Now, when you say items, like food-wise?
Food
like,
items.
Like already
It
made?
All depends on what qualifies as a solid food item and what doesn't, according to the TSA.
Interesting.
So let me give you a few foods that you think you can carry on or not carry on. A pie. Can you carry on a pie on an airplane?
I would say, well,
according to the TSA.
You can, but I don't know if you'd want to. Hit some turbulence, your pie might be all over your carry-on.
No. Is it a yes or no with the TSA? No. It's an absolute yes. You can bring a pie as a carry-on.
Like I said before, I don't know how that would work. Hit turbulence, your pie is going to be all over your carry-on.
Gravy. Can you bring gravy?
Okay, that has to be
as
a
carry-on.
That has to be a no.
Gravy is a no. Cranberry sauce. Remember, cranberries are a fruit. Cranberry sauce, yes or no, according to the TSA. Can you carry it on?
Yes.
Absolutely not.
Oh.
You cannot carry on cranberry sauce.
Not even the canned with the ridges and everything?
No, you can't. That is a solid food item.
Yeah.
It really is. How about a cake?
Again, I think it would be the same thing with the pie. So, yes, but I don't know if you'd want it in your carry-on.
The TSA says, yes, you can bring a cake as a carry-on item. Yes. Stuffing mix. Stuffing mix. Can you bring the stuffing mix as a carry-on according to the TSA? Yes or no?
I would say yeah.
Yes is correct. Yes. How about wine? Can you bring booze? Wine?
No.
You cannot. How about jam in a jar?
Oh.
Jam in a jar. Can you bring jam according to the TSA? Yes or no?
I think sure. Why not? Oh, maybe not. I don't know. I would say yes if I was the TSA.
That is a no.
Okay. Well, goes to show what I know.
Preservatives. Oh, that's the same thing as jam, right?
Yeah.
That would be in the same category, but that's a no also. How about a casserole? Can you bring a casserole?
This, I would think, would be a no.
That is an absolute yes.
What?
Pies, cakes, stuffing mix, casseroles are all good in a carry-on bag. You can bring it on a plane.
These all sound like things that are going to be extremely messy. Like, especially if you hit turbulence, like I've been saying. But whereas if you had preservatives in a jar, at least they're sealed. So they're not going to go spilling all over the place.
Yeah, but they don't know if you sealed it, if it's a... If you made it, could be a homemade thing. You never know what's in it. How about a turkey? But a casserole would be the same thing. You don't know the ingredients. Why isn't a turkey on this list? Are you traveling with a turkey?
You
know, I don't see it.
You put it in one of those container or like dog carriers and put it underneath the plane.
Is it thawing out?
Yeah, is it thawing you're going? Out?
We had a text message earlier when we were talking about turkeys. Let me see if I can find it. It was so funny. A guy that worked at a grocery store. Hold on a second. I'm just about there. I should have queued this up before when we were in a commercial. He worked at a grocery store, and he said that they ran out of turkeys on Thanksgiving Day. And he's like, oh, my job's done. It's not going to be that crowded. And his manager went out and bought 3 dozen turkeys, and they were gone within an hour.
Oh, my God.
But the question is, how do you thaw out a turkey that you just buy that's frozen on Thanksgiving Day? It's
got to
sit out, right? I don't understand that.
Unless you deep fry it?
When we have the chef on tomorrow, we got to ask him about that, about the thaw time, because tomorrow's Wednesday. You got to pull out your turkeys. So, hopefully, a lot of people have their turkeys in their refrigerator right now. I'm scrolling through this. Let's see. I can't find it. It's Molly Hatchet. I'm going through the concert stuff right now. Oh, here it is, right here. Let's see. A district manager came in mid to late morning, and we were out of turkeys. I said we just ran out this morning and thought, perfect, who's buying their turkey today? He bought 2 or 3 dozen more, and he brought them in from his car from another store, and they were gone an hour later. I couldn't believe it. That's crazy.
That's insane.
I don't know how you're going to thaw out a turkey. Interesting. I can't wait for Thanksgiving dinner. I mean, we've been talking about it. Tomorrow, I'm going to bring in the pumpkin pies, and we're going to do the pie tasting. I made a homemade pie. Actually, I made 2 pies today. I'm sorry. Made them last night. 2 pies at home. Homemade.
One for tomorrow and one for the actual dinner?
Yes. So I'm bringing one in. I also have a pie from Jewel, and I have a pie from Costco. And I've said a million times on this radio station that Costco is the greatest pumpkin pie on the planet. It's the size of the wheel on your car.
We just need the Cool Whip or
I have it.
Whip?
I got the Cool Whip.
Nice.
I got it ready to go.
I am in.
Did you see that guy that snuck in a pumpkin pie and whipped cream to the Bears game? How do you do that?
I don't know, but it was brilliant.
Because you go through a metal detector. He had to have help because it was in a tin. Okay, let's say it was plastic, but the whipped cream was in a can. The metal detector's got to go off.
Unless he hid it in a box or something, like in his bag, you know, because they do like the bag check and they maybe didn't open up the bag of like the box or something.
They didn't go through it.
Yeah, they didn't go through it.
You're right.
You know what I mean?
Your bag doesn't go through the metal detector.
Yeah, and he probably had like the whipped cream at the very bottom.
Right.
So they probably, grabbed it and were feeling it around, and then they realized, oh, well, zip up the one section. It's kind of like when you go through like the whole thing at like Disney.
Well, the bag is a clear bag for the NFL, so the bag's got to be clear so they can see the pumpkin pie
right.
And the whipped cream.
That's right.
I still don't understand how he pulled it off.
It had to be in a bag somehow. Had to be.
Well, how do you get it in?
I don't know.
You got the clear bag and you have the metal detector, and the guy did it and posted it on Twitter, and it was everywhere on Monday.
I think it was the guy behind him. I think the guy who had it pulled it out and was like getting it all set. But the video has the guy behind him videotaping it.
Did the guy behind him post it? I thought the guy that ate
I think the
pie.
Guy behind him posted it.
Whatever it is, it's a little crazy.
A guy brought in a pumpkin pie to a Bears game, that's all you need
to
know.
Wow. All right, thank you so much for hanging out. Thank you for sharing your concert memories. I love talking concerts, first concerts, greatest concerts. All these concerts are coming to me. I see the Seals and Croft concert there on the text messages. Awesome stuff. We'll be back tomorrow at 3 o'clock. Curtis will be riding shotgun behind the glass. Brian Noonan is in for Nick next, and... news is coming up in the Northwestern Medicine newsroom. You guys have a great night. It's 720 WGN.